CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show, and I'm so happy to say that I have B2 back with me.
Hello. Hey, how's how you doing?
I forgot what you look like.
Oh, man. You didn't forget what I sound like.
No, I definitely didn't forget what you sounded like.
Yeah, but you replaced me last week with another Brett.
I know, but that was our whole idea, and you weren't here.
Oh, sorry, bro.
Hey, we tried for that Brett threesome, and you just didn't make it.
Tired is tired.
Oh, well, that's what, we always hear when we're trying to get threesomes. So we'll talk about where you were last week a little bit later on in the show, but to keep things as they are and as they always are, I'm going to start off with the app of the week. In fact, before I get to the app of the week, when we sat down, I said to you, you know, I've like redone the whole seating arrangement inside the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't personal. It wasn't because you smell
bad. Further away from you.
Yeah, there we go.
I smell pretty, man. What are you talking about?
You actually do smell good, Brett. But the reason I mentioned that, I don't know if you saw in Digital Buzz this week, that Nivea have come up with a thing called the smell case. So it's like a case that you put on your phone and then you download the app and it tells you if you smell or not.
That could go one or two ways, I suppose.
Well, yeah. I mean, can you imagine that to someone, like you scan them with your phone. Oops, okay, not going there tonight.
It's not personal, but you just stink.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe that'll be the message
app,
that comes through.
Says.
If you guys want to join in on the chat today, the number is 0861555189. Or you can get us on Twitter at CliffCentral.com, Facebook Cliff Central, or WeChat. We do have some guests in the studio today, but before we get to them, let's go to the app of the week. And the one that I found today is called Taxi Later. Now, last week, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, and don't answer that because it might upset me if you say no, but we were talking about Uber. And you know, and the pros and the strife that these guys are going through. So Taxi Later is incredible. See, I didn't say awesome. Basically, what it does is it lets you schedule an Uber ride. So to either be collected, like on the way out, or when you lack a gesape and you can kind of get yourself out of the club, but you can't really remember how to log into your app. You've already rescheduled or pre-scheduled.
I think I've had that problem with you in the past as well. I'm like, oh yeah, I've got your Uber. Oh, man, I keep forgetting. So you order another pint while you wait for an Uber and then...
It's terrible. I mean, but now you don't have that choice because... Obviously, the way Uber works, when the guy approaches, he phones you and so on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can be sitting there going, oh, lekker, and then all of a sudden your phone rings. But I just thought that was someone's actually sat down and thought about the one thing that Uber wasn't doing. I mean, if you know, they do so much. But so it's called Taxi Later. I think it's available on both platforms. Staying with Uber, they were in the week this news.
Nice. I like it when I'm in the week this news.
Boom. So anyway, staying with Uber, if you're in Joburg, they have a thing called Uber Green.
Yeah.
It's electric cars.
Not a moped, because that would be
no.
Good.
I think they did the deal with, if I remember reading, was BMW and
nice.
Nissan.
And the i8.
Yeah, the i8 and then the Nissan, I think it's Leaf is theirs.
Yeah.
So you can get an electric car. They say they're doing it at the Uber X rate, so you're not paying more, but you are working towards saving the environment, which I think is pretty cool. So yeah, big up to Uber. I mean, it's nice to see that guys are starting to embrace electric. And I think what's important, and maybe that's obviously where the marketing is coming behind it, is that South Africans are petrol heads. In fact, most of us are now diesel heads. It's torque, it's turbos. And no one wants to really buy an electric car. It's like buying a Prius. You know, it's like, yeah, it's good for the environment, but when you look at it, it's not really a car.
Not pretty, no.
So this might actually give you a chance to experience an electric car and see that, you know, they're not that sluggish. I mean, that BMW is actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
I don't know about the little one. I think there's two in the range. There's the i8, which is that supercar.
Yeah, super you've got that, like, little...
It's like a square-looking thing. Yeah.
Looking thing, yeah.
I've seen one or two of them driving around. In fact, in Morris, they get their own parkings.
Oh, really?
Like, if BMW drivers weren't pricks enough. Oops, sorry, BMW, but I mean, really, they... drive and now they have their own parkings at
One of our
Morris.
Guests has just left. Oh,
geez,
Brett, what
damn.
Did you say?
Okay. Well, it's better than Brett who drives an Audi B3. Bomber. Audi. So
in the UK, when I was driving around, I mean, all the service stations, you pull in for like very expensive fuel.
Yeah, it is.
But they've got Tesla charging points now.
Really?
Yeah. So I pulled through. I was like, oh, wow, look, there's a Tesla.
Did you pay for it, though? Or was it free?
I'm sure you pay for everything in the UK.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because I think, I stand corrected, but I think in San Francisco on the electric... parking charges, they're actually free. I think they're part of your metered parking, but okay. If you're driving electric and you choose that bay, you can plug in and charge up. Anyway, so well done, Uber. And guys, yeah, I think it goes up until June. So if you are in Gauteng, look out for it. Then we love VR, Brett.
Yes,
we do.
We are working on lots of VR. Yay.
Yeah, so we love VR. So what I came across this week, which I thought was really awesome, there's a company called Live Nation, and they're going to start putting people with VR filming technology into concerts. So you can actually stand in the crowd and watch the concert. I mean, that's pretty sick.
Cool.
You know, first of all, in the States, there are so many concerts to choose from. It's in America at the moment. I don't know if we're getting it here. But now you don't have to worry about it. It's on demand. It's a subscription model, so you'll pay to see the concert. So it's not like you're going to get a free concert. But you can now actually watch it as if you were standing there without those sweaty bodies. Ah, Nivea app. I mean, that would work well there. Sorry, Brie, back off. You really aren't great.
You look like you smell.
So, yeah, I mean, that's where VR is today, or rather this last week. I came up with a really very, very cool find. So it's called Datto Drive. Now, as you know, Gartner is one of our partners, and they did an article on this company called Datto. It's D-A-T-T-O, and it's called Datto Drive. What they do is they offer you a terabyte of data for free in the cloud for the first year. Okay,
well, so that's nice of them.
1 terabyte unlimited storage. But here's where the kicker is, where it's different from your Dropboxes.
What have you got to do?
No, this is the beautiful part about it. That's what I'm talking about. And because Gartner is involved as well, mm-hmm. we kind of know there's some checks and balances there. But they allow multiple access points. So like, you know how you have Dropbox and I have Dropbox, and then if my Dropbox is full, you can't send me stuff. This is a terabyte. So for small businesses, you create one account, you put your stuff in the cloud, and everyone can log in and share, which I think is excellent. And then their model, because you know it's that dependency model, it's like drugs. Like they get us on stuff and they go, and now it's only $9.99.
You didn't know you wanted that until you started using it.
Correct.
Now you can't do that.
Correct.
That's good.
But even that, I think they've been reasonable. They will start charging after a year $10 per terabyte per month. Still the same user access. So it's not
still
per user.
Good.
It's just a terabyte for $10, which I think is really reasonable. And anyone's had a crashed drive will know that putting your stuff in the cloud, it makes sense. For $10, it's nothing bad.
What's the recourse if you put a terabyte's worth of stuff in there for free?
Yeah.
And then you lose a terabyte's worth of stuff. Like, you can't shout at them because you didn't pay for it.
That's actually a bloody good question.
Just wondering. I'm taking what's it, Lady Lives, Candace, Doctor Doom's approach to this? Like,
that's actually a bloody good question.
What would you do?
So if anyone out there knows what the recourse is on cloud servers dropping you.
The better you, the more you own, the better you have.
Yeah. Huh.
Interesting, though. We'll see how that works.
Okay, so like two more quick things before we get to our guests. Apple didn't have a good week. Their quarter results came out. Samsung has taken the lead again in the States.
But SE is not working for them then.
Yeah, but well, you like it.
I only like it because
I mean,
of the size.
You're excited because of the size.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they caught it, but that doesn't, SE I don't think affects. That hopefully will change things around for them going into the next quarter. But more importantly, this was quite a funny one. They lost the rights to the exclusive use of the word iPhone in China.
What?
So there's a company in China that makes, ironically, phone cases, laptop bags, iPad bags. They're like really, really cool products. I looked at their website. It's like good quality leather, really stylish looking pouches, but they call them iPhone. And they have done before Apple had made a firm commitment to start selling the iPhone in China. So the courts ruled in this other company's name. iPhone's still allowed to be sold as a registered trademark, blah, 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 but it's not exclusive, and they can't stop these guys. So, I mean, now if you do a Google search or anything like that, iPhone's got a longer history, as in the case.
And they might have a few more devices out, maybe.
Yeah, well, but they've got. But the thing is that they supply things to Androids as well. Their cases go to Windows machines. So it was quite interesting. So, I mean, Apple, sorry guys, you had a bit of a bad week. But to make you feel better, I have to breathe. I try and love Microsoft. I do. I wake up in the morning. I'm thankful I'm alive. I get out of bed. I go to gym. And on the way there, I go, I'm really not going to get upset about taxis. And I'm going to try and love Microsoft. And then they do shit like this. So they've made an announcement that they're going to stop the free upgrade of Windows 10. On July 29th or something. I don't know when it is. So
but
anyone
you can't
out
say
there,
you didn't see that coming.
But here's the thing. It is free already. You can go and upgrade it now. It's free.
So that you don't moan about it. It's exactly what I said earlier. If you
why?
Get it free, you can't moan about
it. But why? Like, okay, if you've ever put an app into the App Store and it was free, you can't make it paid. You have to do a whole new package build and stick it back into the store.
But
because someone else got it for free. Mm. Yeah. Well, guys,
that's
going to
be a very interesting conversation.
Really? So you're welcome to phone in as well and tell me what your thinking was. I know you won't. But yeah, you really.
I'm sure they have a PowerPoint presentation we can read.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can still open PowerPoint. But I mean, it's just. And it's $119 as well. So that's like saying, please pirate my software.
Yeah.
OS is $29.99. Okay, so it's $30 for Apple, $120 for Microsoft or Windows 10 or whatever. And we all know it will be like 11 and 12 and 73 within a month anyway. Anyway, so enough bashing of Microsoft.
Rant.
Let's go to the fun stuff. So we've got two guests here today. We have Francois from Pocket Slip and Rainier from Nedbank sitting with us. How's it, guys?
How's it, Red One? Red Two?
There we go. We've coached well, huh?
How's it, gentlemen?
How's it going?
So on the left, we've got Francois from Pocket Slips. Not that the left matters.
I was going to say, who the hell can see
we
the
just
left?
Let's quickly pan him left so everybody knows. No. Mm. So Francois, let everybody know your voice. This is Francois. Hey.
How's it, guys?
So you're from Pocket Slip.
That's correct.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about Pocket Slip.
Yeah. So Pocket Slip, elevator pitch, what we do is digital receipting. So we feel that the future of retail is paperless. Let me ask you the question.
Yep.
You B1 or B2?
B2.
I can't recall B2.
Jeez, I'm about to find out my pattern.
When you withdraw money at an ATM,
yes.
Do you keep that little paper receipt or do you chuck it away?
Don't even take it.
But why don't you?
Well, most of the time the machine's probably run out of paper, so you don't get it anyway. No, I don't really see the need in clogging my wallet up with
100%, and you've got a digital vault on your
banking. My SMS goes anyway.
100%, yeah. And you can just log onto your internet banking and withdraw a transaction.
Correct.
So the question begs is, why are retailers still producing paper? And we've come to say, listen, you know, there's better tech in retailers in any case than what banks use in ATM. You wouldn't believe it. They run on Microsoft B1. so
you know what? I've actually just got to jump in there as well. Okay. It's not that I hate. In fact, I'm an Apple user, so we're quite happy to play nicely with everyone, but everyone's not always happy to play nicely with us. It's just when they do stupid things. That's the part, like killing the Nokia brand, you know, and then coming out with Lumia and then,
I mean, I'm seeing the same movie. I had a Lumia before I drank the Apple Kool-Aid, so.
Welcome to the tribe.
Mac revolution is almost complete.
The dark side, we have cookies. I mean, you know, the question begs, that if the whole world's going paperless, you know, why are we still producing paper in the 21st century?
Well, we're going cashless as well. So
100%. We're going cardless, you know, cashless. You just spoke about Uber. I know the Uber 4 tag has been run down countlessly in Silicon Valley, but this is kind of like Uber for receipting. We build for a purpose, and that's what we do. So we turn the digital receipt, the paper receipt digital. Rainier will butt in now, and his idea was the tagline, it's the original but digital.
Okay,
so
cool.
Next time you go to one of your retailers who supports Pocket Slip, you also Pocket Slip at the till, and we store your receipts in the cloud for you to retrieve whenever you want.
Okay. And listeners can check it out at pocketslip.com?
That's correct,
so
yeah.
If you've got any questions on that, just take a look at it and send us some informed questions. Rich, you got the details there on how people get in touch with us?
0861-555-189. I do that so well, huh?
You do. And then on Twitter, if you guys are on Twitter, drop us a line or a question at cliffcentral.com, hashtag futurology. Tweet it to us. Sorry.
So one of the things that intrigued me, I mean, I was talking about Uber Green earlier on, and I mean, I'm even starting to see it in South Africa that we are finally becoming conscious of our environment and
absolutely.
That waste. Mm. We were talking off air as well that I go to a restaurant and, you know, the people are just pre-programmed. I give them my credit card. They put it in the machine. I say, I don't need a slip, but they still push the button. I go to the petrol station. Same thing. Mm. I get this thing and I go crunch, 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 and I throw it on the car seat or whatever or wherever I am. I leave it on the bill. Now, first of all, in a restaurant, leaving my credit card slip in the restaurant is just stupid. I mean, I know that, but that's the thing. So I love the idea of Pocket Slip. I like the idea that I have a choice. Should I want to get that? Because I, quite honestly, I don't want to get it. And I think that's one of the selling points as well, is that you work on a pay-per-use model. So it's the vendor doesn't have to go through these rolls and rolls and rolls of paper, which, hello, NetBank, you do charge for.
Yeah, we do.
You see. So I don't mind mentioning, I know everyone does. Someone has to pay for
it. Brett, I think it's also that we saw the potential opportunity from an innovation partnership to say that NetBank can be innovative in this world. There's big potential. We've thrown our weight behind the guys from PocketSlip to assist and help them. We used our, let's say, our IT skill sets and security, especially to ensure that these guys can store data safely.
Yeah.
They've checked the right boxes. From a green perspective, it all makes sense with NetBank going green. There's no paper. We're saving trees. We're saving the merchants money. And there's a lot more that we can do, ultimately, when you're in the digital receipt world.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. I came across some technology in the States a few years ago where people were crushing, you know, this whole big data that we always talk about. But guys were taking the data of the consumer's behavior, looking at it and making offers or loyalty or rewards that were relevant to his or her consumption patterns. Now, privacy issues aside, because obviously there's terms and conditions and people acknowledge the fact that if they're using PocketSlip, they realize that certain data is going to be analyzed. I'm all for that. I'd like you to send me information that's relevant to my shopping. Is that something that PocketSlip is doing, or is that one of the reasons behind it? Because it has to be more than just a receipt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, to your point and to Renew's point as well. I mean, the big data aspect, and that's one of the large value propositions that we work on for the consumer. I mean, the consumer today, you know, likes instant gratification. He likes tech. He, you know, if you think about the people listening to your show, I'm sure people enjoy having something instantly, having, you know, pressing a button and getting what they want. And the question is always, you know, I don't own a dog. I own a cat. And
so do I.
Good, so there we go. and retailers keep sending me, you know, ads on dog food or on children. I don't have children. You know, it's a shotgun approach, and people are sick of the marketing. So what we're definitely offering in the future, and like you said, it's an opt-in principle, so the user can choose to have it or not. I'm also someone who shares my data everywhere because I love the fact that people bring offers to me. I'm lazy. We definitely, what we'll do, and that's a very big value proposition apart from all the others to the consumer, is to say, we'll partner with the guys and bring you offers on what you have purchased. Mm. So there's relevant to you, and it's stuff that you actually want, as opposed to shotgun marketing and just bombing me with ads.
That's pretty cool. So you're pushing relevance on...
Absolutely.
Has, which is all important.
Sure.
So seeing you've walked in the founder's shoes, I mean, that's the sleepless nights. And I must say you are lucky that you have NetBank behind you, because, you know, in the fintech space, and I've said it before on air, I had the guys from Zapier.
Yeah,
I had the guys from Zapier, and I started asking the bank question. In fact, B3 is Brett St. Clair, which is Absa Bank. Mm. Sorry. Absa and NetBank.
Oh, we're agnostic. No, we like to talk to everybody.
But no, this is NetBank's time today.
This is where you mute the news mic.
No, but we all know Brett, and he's a great guy. And you know, he was saying as well that you can't really get into banking if you don't wear the school tie. So you've obviously done something that's piqued an interest. So congrats on that. I mean, I mean that sincerely.
But the
thing for me is that I want to be in a position where I'm happy to share my information, but I want you to give me value back for it. It's got to be more. And that's where this whole consumerism exercise that we're facing, you know, is that I'll get the slip. Cool. It's a function. But that extra value that's coming out of it. So as I said to you, walking in the founder's shoes, you know, before the NetBank deal even, or even after the NetBank deal, where the guys got behind you and, you know, it helped you open some doors. And it's a double-pronged question. Was it through NetBank that those doors opened? Because the challenge for you is to get to every single merchant. Because at the end of the day, if you're not available in my store that I go to frequently, I'm not going to use you because you're not catering to me. It's that, you know, it's that narcissistic attitude that consumers have. So can you take us through that journey, you know, as to what, how did that happen? How did you get out there? You know, where are you? Like, where are the big stores so people can start to actually...
Yeah, sure. So two-pronged question. So a little bit of history of myself. I'm an investment banker by trade. So, you know, I ditched the big band world of banking, you know, to pursue my dream of changing the world and changing how people transact. Absolute advice. If, you know, if there are prospective founders of startups listening is that, you know, you can read many books and everyone will say the same thing, is don't try to be everything to everyone.
Yep.
Recognize where you need to fill gaps in what you can't do. So I'm not the technical co-founder. Reino Kutsia is the technical co-founder and he's a brilliant technical guy. He doesn't like people much, but he's brilliant.
Headset in the dark room with the two screens.
In what he does. But I love people and I know business and I know banking. So if you are a technical guy, you know, align yourself with a co-founder who's strong business-wise. And if you're a business guy, align yourself with the guys who can back you up technically. So that's the first thing is, you know, supplement yourself. Absolutely. And then secondly is, you know, don't pitch up at a large corporation with an idea. Large corporations tend to be risk averse. Gain traction, graft, bootstrap as much as you can. Come with a story, come with interest, come with letter of intent with people who you've spoken to. And if you have something and some traction in the market, larger corporates are much more open to listen to you, and larger corporates being either a telco or a bank or a tech partner, than if you just pitch up with an idea. It gives you much more traction. So up until date, we've signed up quite a few guys on our own, but since partnering with NetBank and the weight that they've thrown behind us, it's really skyrocketed. Guys who we have who are rolled at nationally are Le Creuset, you know, the pots and pans.
Yeah.
So great partner there from a retail perspective. And we've got many, you know, we try to tackle the mom and pop stores as well, to your point. Mm. If you go and grab a coffee as an example, our first Perfect Cup was the first partner who came on board. It's a little coffee shop in...
Let me guess, Cape Town.
Actually, locally.
It's
in Tyrone Avenue in Parkhurst.
Okay.
You know, we try to cover everyone. We speak into the likes of iStore, Vita eCafe, Build It, has committed clicks. We're probably doing a pilot very soon with chatting to the guys. Today, we had a great meeting with the guys from Levi and Diesel.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we're trying to really target all market segments.
That's really cool. I mean, the fact that you can get... So, you guys are getting a really good... insight as to what the trends are in terms of sales. I'm assuming you can see a lot more than just the bottom line total from these slips. So you start to see what products are trending, who's buying what when. That sort of big data starts to help not just banks, but all the retailers know sort of good seasons, bad seasons. Are we doing something right? Are we doing something wrong?
Absolutely. And I think that comes back to what B1 was saying is, you know, you need to be customer-centric in everything that you do as a startup, as a retailer, as any business today. You've got to think about your product and your customer first. And the more data you have and the more insight you have on what they're thinking, the better the experience can be. And I think I just want to touch on one thing as well. In the app, we've got, similar to an Uber, we've got a rating system.
Okay.
So receipt delivers and you rate the experience. So it's a bit of power in the consumer's hand. And if you want to, you can escalate that to your point earlier. You can let the retailer know who you are if you're unhappy.
You know who I am.
You do.
Big Brother is always listening.
Everything you're saying is, it's swan song. And I mean that. It really is refreshing to hear that. I mean, even
the
approach that goes out. Why have the retailers not smashed your door down?
Brett,
too?
Yeah, I think it's also, remember, South African markets are very, not just banks are risk averse. To change the way you've been doing things for 10, 20, 50 years, takes a lot of effort as well. NetBank has assisted opening doors to what we call pilot-friendly merchants that are game to look at new ideas, new concepts. It's taken internally with the NetBank also quite a few number of weeks just to sell the concept internally, get the right governance forums approvals up to a very senior executive level to say, guys, okay, you can go ahead now with these guys.
So, Rania, that's a great comment. And I mean, I've walked in both sides.
You've walked the floors,
I've definitely walked the floors, and I know exactly what you're saying. Is it an integration aspect? So what I mean by that, you know, for people listening that are not necessarily from the banks and the EMV side of it, and that you have these POS machines and EPOS machines that are out there in retail, put card, push number, slip comes out. Now you have to integrate to go into PocketSlip, which is now an app or a cloud-based server. Is it a big mission? And I'm saying that because if it isn't, then you know, the guys listening, hey, reach out.
Brett, it's system by system dependent. And how much you want to do with that merchant? How much value do you want to add to them, to the consumer? And that's where we, between PocketSlip and NetBank, we created that, let's call it a partnership, and say, guys, how do we tackle each client? This is not a one-shoe-fits-all type of solution. Each one is unique. Each one needs to be deep-dived. And what we found is once the guys have seen the value, it starts fast-tracking the IT implementation side of it. So the approach is usually would have gone to an IT guy and say, guys, this is what we want to do. And not anymore. You go to the CFOs, the marketing directors, the guys that really are pushing the sales or things like that within the organizations.
And the focus is more on how do we get it to work rather than should we get it to work.
Correct. Yeah, and it's also fine. It's also the right type of merchant.
Yeah.
Shotgun doesn't work.
Yeah, and I mean, to add there, I mean, just comes from an earlier question, is the technical co-founder comes from a point-of-sale background.
Okay.
So it was purposefully written, and it took a very long time before we went into the market to make this as easy as possible to integrate. So we find it's a week or two, three-week process.
That's not bad, though.
Yeah.
I mean, 2-3 months is what I would expect with banking and, you know, and financial integration.
100%.
Two-three weeks is not bad.
Absolutely, but I think it's the way that it's been set up. It's very light. So, I mean, not to delve into the absolute technical details, but we basically just take the information that would have gone to the printer, we relay it into the cloud, we connect it to whoever wants the receipt, and we build a template to what the retailer wants it to look like, and boom, you have a digital receipt. So we're not reinventing the wheel, we're using a lot of what exists. And I think to your point earlier as well, we love partnering. Yeah. Look, you know, we're not a payment app, we're agnostic point of sale wise, we're agnostic retailer wise. We just want to be the platform that aggregates digital receipts. So we key to partner with people, you know, from a CRM, from a payment point of view.
I was actually going to get to that question as well. I hate using the word white label, and especially when it comes to fintech, because Renier, I mean, we both know that's not even an option when you start looking at payments and going behind walls. But you know, is there an API? It must be some form of an API anyway.
Yeah.
Obviously, if I wanted to make my pocket slip have my name on and my company's name on powered by,
absolutely.
Is that how it works at the moment already, or is that like a...
Yeah. To answer your question, so, I mean, retailers are also sensitive to the communication that goes out to their clients. So we use existing platforms such as apps, email, you know, it's a multi-delivery. The app is how we prefer to talk to a PocketSlip user, but we also use email, whatever is existing in the retailer. So we absolutely, in quoted brackets, white label the solution and use the primary delivery mechanism because that makes sense. But with a caveat that the PocketSlip also still lives in the PocketSlip environment, for the simple reason that if we take 10 seconds now, we can name 30 retailers. You're not going to download 30 apps. 100%. Just to keep your receipting. We need to aggregate that to keep the user in mind.
Very cool. We're gonna wrap up and have a quick break. I mean, you guys are here, so you're definitely welcome to join us for the next, because we're going to be talking about online. But one of the questions I wanted to ask, which would work towards that, is for normal online purchases, in other words, non-brick and mortar, okay, is PocketSlip an opportunity, an option, sorry, or are you playing in that space?
Without a doubt, yeah, okay. No, definitely. That's the future. And I think, you know, you'll cut off your own knees knowing where e-commerce is going and how it's growing, especially in international markets. If you don't play in that space, you're not going to be relevant. And, you know, you want all your receipts in one place.
Yeah.
From the Perfect Cup in Parkhurst to your TV at Macro or your, you know, your online purchase on Takealot or wherever.
Yeah.
So we definitely work with all merchants in whichever format.
Because I think what I was getting there is for those people that are starting to get into e-commerce, I mean, to get a payment gateway is easy, but the admin paper slip invoicing side of it is not.
Absolutely.
And that's where, you know, I'm thinking that obviously this, for the little guys out there that are sitting with a great e-commerce platform or potential platform, now you can offer the back end where the paper delivery occurs
as
well.
It's absolutely that. And the thing is that, you know, in today's world with tech, partnership is what it's about. We are experts in what we do. We know the law and the legislation around what needs to go into digital receipts. And we take care of that so that the retailer can go and sell his products. And when you think about mobile POS, the little guy in India or the guy in, you know, rural parts of South Africa selling things off of a mobile POS unit, where is he printing receipts? And we enable that guy as well on the street that carry around a printer to also send you a receipt and comply in that way.
That's excellent. Fantastic. And you're not just saving space in people's wallets. You're actually helping them with taxes as well. And that's
absolutely
something we can talk about when we come back out of the track.
Yeah.
Cool. Guys, thank you very much. I said, please, your mics are here. So we're going to go into e-commerce now as well. We've got Simon Lips phoning in from Cape Town. But yeah, let's have a quick break and just quickly regroup.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, we are back. For those that have missed the first part of the show, why? Where were you? Bad People podcast coming up just now. We're sitting here talking to Francois and Renier from PocketSlip and Nedbank, respectively. And we have Simon Lips joining us on the line. Simon, you there?
Hey, Brett, I'm here. How are you doing?
How's it going?
Good, thanks. And yourself?
Good. If you can just get a bit closer to the mic. For the listeners, Simon's actually on Skype, so we don't have him in the studio. Just give me a, how's it there again?
Hey, is this better?
Yeah, that's better, much better.
Climb into the laptop.
Climb right in. so we've been talking to the guys about Pocket Slip, which is paperless receipts. It's an app. The merchants can give you a choice to get your receipt for your purchases, electronically. And I just thought it'd be great to have you on, being someone who builds, and if I'm, stand me if I'm correct, but one of the first Magenta builders in the country, and specializing in building e-commerce, correct?
Yeah.
There we go. So I thought let you and maybe in France, I have a little bit of an up and down chat, as to how this world has evolved for us. I mean, it's been an incredibly short period of time as well. So yeah, Franco, your mic's on as well. So please say, how's it?
How's it, man?
Hey, how you doing? So
great in yourself.
I caught the end of your chat, and there's one thing that I really agree with, in that you guys are the specialists and you should be helping the merchants. I think that's a very valid point. I think there's so much to worry about when you're doing online transactions or when you're trying to sell something online. Everyone is a social media marketing expert. So it is quite hard. It's difficult to know who to trust and what to do, but you do need specialists in every single different category or field in order to help you navigate what you've got to do, number one. Number two, I love the idea of the pocket lists, of the cash slips being in one place, being emailed to you. This is something that Apple have been doing in their stores around the world for years. Anything you buy from Apple, the guy types it into his little iPhone in front of you, you swipe your card, you walk out of there, and the slip is emailed to you. I mean, you couldn't really ask for more.
Absolutely, I fully agree. So, it's funny enough, iStore is one of the guys who will be rolling out locally. But to your points, I mean, also with e-commerce, every second guy and every second retailer is a specialist in selling things. But when it comes to the online marketplace, it's a whole different ballgame. And I think retailers need to partner with people such as yourself when delving into online. Building up an e-commerce solution is quite different from seeing someone in person. And retailers who have embraced this and who've partnered with experts on the outside have gained far more traction than people trying to do it themselves in-house and not necessarily having the experience or the background to do that.
Yeah, we agree, totally. The one thing that I'm finding here is that there's a very small group of South African people that have e-commerce experience, and I'm talking more on the merchant side than on the supplier side. There's a very small amount of people who have good e-commerce experience. Obviously, with a huge South African diaspora, there's a whole lot of people living overseas who are coming back to South Africa. Case in point, David Gibbons, who set up Edcon's e-commerce, Simon Laver, who's doing the Fashini Group's e-commerce. Those guys, it's great having them here and having the experience, but they're very few and far between. So we find that on the merchant side, they need a lot of help. There are a lot of people who are great at bricks and mortar retail, but don't have the e-commerce experience required to make that jump to where they should be.
So if I can jump in there for a sec, one of the reasons I wanted to chat to you as well, and in fact, Francois mentioned it earlier, is that the tech side of building sites and the understanding and user side, as in from the consumer point of view, couldn't be further worlds apart if we tried. With you being involved pretty much from day dot, I mean, when the e-commerce site building requirements started, you've obviously gone through a lot of pain and some school fees as well. And we were just saying before we went out to the break and got you on the show, it's very easy to make a mistake in this space. You can sit as an entrepreneur and come up with a great idea. You want to sell cool stuff online. Take us through how that journey needs to look. I mean, that's where a company like yours comes to the fore, is that you have access to the different tools and the different backend. How do you guide through something like that? I mean, the 101 of getting the e-commerce site built and built right.
So, look, the most important thing that we found here is just getting the merchant to understand what it is they want and for them to be able to express that to you. You know, we get some briefs that say, well, there's a site we'd like it to be like that, but better.
Brett and I are both smiling now because we've got those every day.
You know, now you get a brief like that, it's extremely scary because there's just no way to actually formulate what you're looking for.
Yeah.
We find that, you know, the clients that we have that understand that they need help and ask for help are great. We obviously, not everyone's like that. You have other clients that think they know what they're doing and they don't, and that obviously causes problems along the way. We always make recommendations about bringing somebody in who's got this experience, be it from another South African e-commerce merchant or from a provider, supplier, or somebody from overseas. It is very, very helpful. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The guys that we have in this country in retail are very, very good with bricks and mortar. I heard an analyst once say that you walk around any South African retail store and you could be anywhere in the world. Things change once you walk through the doors into the back. I don't think we as strong in systems and processes as some of the guys overseas are. But, you know, definitely with e-commerce, we're just not there. It does cause problems. It does make things a little bit harder. The thing is, you know, the nice thing about the internet is you actually have a chance to make mistakes. Should you build a bricks and mortar store and you don't build a door and people can't get in, you have a huge problem. It's going to take you 6 months to smash down a wall and build the door.
No, not really, but you can just burn it down.
Yeah. You know, with the internet, you know, if it's something quick, you can change it overnight and it's live the next day. So, yes, to a degree, it's where you can make mistakes, but you need the help. You need the hand-holding. You need somebody to explain to you how things work in this brave new world of digital.
Yeah. And Simon, it's P2 here. Just during the break, Francois and I were just talking about how adoption and trust is sort of built in new tech as we go. I mean, a few years ago, credit cards come out. Not everybody sort of trusted their credit card. Everything had to be cash. Now everybody's using the credit card. Same with mobile, e-commerce, or just e-commerce online. People are sort of were quite wary about where they're going to be using their information, whether or not they're going to pay for something they may never receive. We're definitely seeing a change of that now. How are you seeing that? Are you seeing pretty massive growth? I mean, as we all hearing, or is it sort of going to be a sort of a sustained growth over time?
Look, I've got to tell you something. I think the anecdotal evidence doesn't stack up. You know, there's multiple sites in this country that are doing millions in turnover every single month. Small sites that you wouldn't even have heard of that are doing 4 or 5 million rand a month in turnover. They've got to be selling it to somebody. I don't generally think that people are really, really as wary of credit card transactions as they make out.
At the moment.
Yeah. Or even for the last few years have they been. I do think that there is some latent leftover, I'm a bit worried about entering my credit card details online. But in general, the people that you expect to be shopping online are quite happy to put their credit card details in. You've also got to remember that a lot of these people that say, oh, I would never shop online, have bought airline tickets online.
Yeah.
They've paid for things online already. So
I won't spend 500, but I will spend 20,000 rand on my air ticket.
Yes. So. Yeah, and you're not worried about that. But you see, and I think that's the thing with most people. E-commerce in South Africa is definitely growing hugely. I know that Worldwide Works puts it at about 30 to 35% year on year. I've got to tell you, I find it to be much higher than that. If you look at the sites that we do, the growth from 1 year to the next is definitely more than 35%. If you look at the fact that a lot of the major retailers, the major brands are building online stores now, it's making a lot more people feel a lot more comfortable. I mean, if you look at Edcon, it's a two-step process to link your Edgar's card to make purchases online with your account.
It's fantastic. So it's frictionless.
Nobody's got problems with that, and people are doing it. So, yes, I think as South Africans, we talk a good game and we complain a lot, but when it comes down to it, we're not as afraid as we make out, and we actually get on with it.
Simon, it's Francois here. I've got an interesting question for you, something I wondered about for a while. Many bricks and mortar retailers are going the e-commerce route. And what I find in South Africa, and is a question I want to pose to you, is how hard is it for a bricks and mortar retailer to use his existing legacy systems in terms of stock levels and stock control? Because there's nothing more frustrating than going onto an e-commerce site and not knowing if the stock's available at the retailer. How, you know, is South Africa a market ready for that? Do you find challenges? How do they do that?
Look, I think most of the guys have worked out how to do it, and they use the existing systems. The people that go through the pain are groups like Fonterra that have to do the integration between something that was built for bricks and mortar, and now you've got to pull information out of it and make it useful for e-commerce. I think, you know, you are able to do it, and it doesn't make too much of a difference. You do run into problems when you're trying to fulfill from a single store. And that's more about your user experience than the actual back-end systems. Specifically, I'm talking about Woolworths, where you can go through and almost the end of the transaction, and when you're about to check out, they tell you, sorry, this isn't available, it's not in stock.
Absolutely, which is so frustrating as a user.
Yeah, you know, that's just user experience. I mean, Woolworths know at any second exactly how much stock they've got in any single store. It's all about building the site in the right way so that you can communicate that to the user. I think they've made a mistake there and they haven't done it properly. I think if you look at other guys, they've managed to sort that out, and they've mitigated the problems. If there's no stock in that store, they can ship it from a different store. They can ship from a central warehouse. Mm. So I think in South Africa, guys are working out how to do it. You've got to remember, South Africans are very, very enterprising. Rightly or wrongly, we tend to make a plan and get things going in the way that we want them to. So legacy systems don't create too much of a problem, but it does create a lot of extra work for your provider.
Yeah, one of those initiatives that I've seen as B2 here, and one of the things we've seen is the client saying, well, if I don't have the stock, I'll just put the e-commerce solution in my store, and I'll call it the Endless Aisle, and it'll be this catalog that is bigger than my shelves can handle, so I can still make the sale. And it's kind of the crib, as South Africans do. We're like, I need to sell, and I don't care whether I've got it in front of me, or if you want it in blue, I'll give it to you in blue. Are you seeing that as well with some of your bricks and mortar to online space?
So not really. We tend to work with our clients to go with things a little bit slower and actually work out exactly how to do it. We're working with one of the major retailers in the country at the moment on an endless aisle system. The aim is to make it more convenient for the users, for the customers, because they have smaller stores all over the country which don't carry a full range. It's not just about shoving things down people's throats. It's more about, look, if you come into this branded store, you would want to be able to buy anything, including the stuff that we don't have in the store because it's too small to carry. You know, there's ways to sort it out. There's ways to do it. I do agree that some people are just, hey, endless aisle, here it is, get whatever you want. And, you know, the thought behind the logistics and user experience and that just hasn't been put into it the way that it should be. But, you know, as South Africans, we're pretty good. I think we've really missed the e-commerce boat in general. I know e-commerce has been around in South Africa since 98, 99. But as a mainstream activity, it's probably only the last few years that it's happening. But we're jumping straight into omnichannel. I think you'll find a lot of places have got endless aisles and click and collect services and things like that, which allow you to decide on which touch point you want to use as a customer, as a user. You'll find that there'll be a lot of fly-by-night people. Everyone will try to get in on the act in the beginning, and every brand will try and offer whatever they can possibly offer. And those will be rationalized over time, and people will realize that they've got to deliver on good service. It's not just you can buy anything you want if you use the tablet in store and then we'll find a way to get it to you. You've actually got to have the systems and the processes behind that to back it up.
Yeah. Just a follow-up question on that then. We always say at Big Brave that the digital solution doesn't replace human beings. There still has to be some sort of human interaction, obviously with processes and stuff, that's obvious. But there are times when sort of the silent salesman plays a very big role in trying to close some additional sales. So your retail hours are 8 to 6, and then you've got your through-the-glass interaction possibly. So people are able to shop now at the bricks and mortar while it's closed. So yes, it's nice to have human interactions. It's a double-edged sword here, but that through the glass is futurology, looking at how retail is going to take place in bricks and mortar, but also that make sure that you've got the human being there. People, if they're going to come to bricks and mortar, they don't want to keep touching screens. They want to have a salesman that's going to smile at them.
I'd like to see a salesman that just smiles.
Or that knows what they're talking about when they come up and ask you something.
Okay.
But are your clients defining their strategy when they come to you, or are you helping them with that?
No, so we help them define the strategy. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things that we've learned over the years. We've built about 140 different e-commerce websites on 5 different continents around the world. You learn a lot of different things about how it works, and you actually start seeing the nuances that are different between each country. But it is very important, especially in South Africa, because it's new to a lot of people. Somebody walks into the store and you hand them a tablet and say, well, we don't have this available in store, but you can find it online.
Yeah.
You can't just do that. You've got to make sure they know what they're doing. You've got to give them the option of whether you're going to find it for them or are they happy to do it for themselves. So 100%, yes, you need that human interaction. You even just need somebody watching the orders come in and making sure that everything's done properly and overseeing it all. You could probably automate 99% of what you've got to do here. You know, payment gateways work by themselves. Couriers get notified and come pick things up. You could probably pick, pack, and ship the stuff without even having to get a human involved. But you don't want to do that. You want somebody overseeing things. There is obviously fraud that happens, even with 3D Secure. You want somebody keeping an eye on it. You want somebody holding the customer's hand and helping them through things. You want people following up saying, did you get your very expensive item that was delivered to you yesterday? Are you happy with it? Would you like to return?
Rainier's got to jump in here.
Yeah, I think the bank's got a very nice term for that stuff like that, is treating customers fairly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the human element. We forget that they're not machines.
Yeah.
They're people. We want to get their money, but let's help them spend it wisely.
Well, we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago about AI. We were talking about all this AI. You can automate everything, and there's artificial intelligence that can deal with humans. But ultimately, there's that emotional question. People want to know that they're being handled, and they're being handled correctly, fairly. If I'm going to spend money with you, I want to know that that is reciprocated with you. You value my money as much as I value your product.
And then you create a long-term value relationship with your customer, irrespective of which product you use, if it's a banking relationship, if it's a pocket slip, it's an e-commerce environment. Yeah. And South Africans are loyal and trustworthy.
Yeah.
I need to. Yeah. So I've got to get close to wrapping up here. I think, you know, in a give us that elevator pitch, that proverbial elevator pitch. Guys are looking to go into e-commerce. You know, they can reach out to a company like yourselves, but what's the checklist that they have to put in place before opening that door?
Look, you've got to have the right people there, and you've got to have the right amount of people who can take on the responsibility and do it. If you've never done e-commerce before, there's a lot of research that needs to go into it. You need to have everyone in your organization willing to accept the paradigm shift and start working to it, because it affects every single part of the organization. And you've got to identify and find the right people who can work this through and help, because at the end of the day, it's a huge change in your organization. And if you talk to anyone in management, executive, C-level, they all say the same thing. The biggest problem is change, and managing change through an organization is a huge issue. E-commerce brings a lot of change. Most of it is good, but a lot of it gets resisted.
That's awesome, I agree with those sentiments. Okay, well, thank you for joining us, and for the listeners,
thanks,
it's Fonterra.com, Fonterra.com, and Simon Leps. So if you are thinking about it, I mean, you're halfway there, but there's definitely a long way to go. And for the merchants that are already playing in that space, both brick and mortar and online, you know, we've got the guys here from Pocket Slip as well. So please reach out to Francois. Francois Renier, thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yo, B1, thanks, man. It's awesome. B2 is smelling better as well. So
he is.
Come on.
Okay, so now you're really under the bus. Oh, even the guests are throwing you. So give us the concluding thought for the day.
Well, as with most things in digital, experience seems to be the key. It's always about whether the experience was a good one or a bad one, and being able to rate that pass at the point of purchase is fantastic. So PocketSlip is doing fantastic with that big data. Not only are you tracking individual transactions, but you're tracking markets as a trend, which is fantastic. Fonterra doing great stuff make sure the strategy is there for how your customers actually engage with your brand. Don't just stick a shop up and expect people to come.
Yeah.
Make sure that there's a great experience. It's one thing to put it up and have people shop, but it's one to have them come back. So digital is all about experiences. It's all about sharing. Make sure that that experience is able to last past the point of purchase.
Fantastic. Simon, thank you.
Renier,
concluding comment.
And Banks. Bank.
At least banks are trying to move into the innovation space.
Yeah.
And I think we're breaking new boundaries. Agreed. People are realizing it.
Excellent.
Well, guys, thanks again. Thanks for your time and thanks for being here, Simon. Thanks for connecting.
Thanks for your time.
See you later. Cheers. And until next time, keep your screens clean and your knobs shiny.
This is CliffCentral.com.